Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Saving money on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Menards has a huge selection of concrete and mortar mixes. Our concrete products are great for a variety of applications, including pouring a walkway, setting a post, or even installing stone veneer. View our entire selection of concrete mixes and supplies in-store and on Menards.com. Plus, check out the weekly flyer for more great deals happening this week. Save big money at
Menards. Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson, here on the Big Friday edition of The Yard. Hope it's a payday for you. You may notice the sound quality is a little bit better today. I don't always record from the road, but I changed the setting. I had a few people that said, Steve, it sounded like you were whispering, trying to be respectful of the other hotel guest. Well, that's not really the case. I mean, not that I'm a rude and boorish person, at least as far as you know, but I just didn't change the setting. So here we are. Hopefully this is better for you all. We're going to talk a little bit about what's happened the last couple of days. We'll preview what's ahead. Got a lot of the hosting discussion to talk about. Of course, it's one of the reasons you come to Hoover. It's not just for baseball and the free meals and things like that. I mean, I'm not a homeless person, though I do dress like one at times. But anyway, you like to get to talk to other people that maybe have some information that you don't, that you guys really want to hear. And so your good friend and host has worked the sources extensively in person. I've talked to several people in the National College Baseball media, and I have respect for all of them, like some more than others. But one of the things that I want to say before we even get too deep into the show is nobody in the National College Baseball media is going to be picking who hosts, who's a top eight, who makes the field. They're all projecting based on experience and information, just like all of us are. Now, we respect them because they're doing a great job covering the game. But it's important to understand. I remember back in 2021, and I'm not going to sit here and get into some whole big thing, right? In 2021, after we went 2-Q at Hoover, everybody in the college baseball media said, State's not going to be a top eight national seed. However, I went myself and did a resume-by-resume comparison, posted it on Gene's page, and said, yes, not only will we be a top eight, it's not even a question. And lo and behold, we were. Went on to win a national championship. And I don't say that in any way to praise myself. It's just I think it's important to do your own homework and not just trust what everybody else is telling you. I'm not here to just collect opinions and then regurgitate them, right? I like to find out what everybody else is thinking, what criteria they think the committee is going to emphasize this year. And the thing that I go back to, and I don't know if we're going to host yet or not. I think that's still to be determined. There are some people that are very adamant that, yes, Mississippi State will host, and some others that say they won't. So it's going to be a very, very close thing, for sure. But I think it's important to understand that as we work through this, the committee has introduced KPI in the quad system, and there's a reason they do that. And yes, that's all kind of fueled by RPI. But if the Division I baseball committee felt that RPI was a perfect system, if it wasn't flawed in some ways, and it is, I know some other people are like, oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Steve, it's a scientific formula. No, it's some guy's opinion. It is. It's some guy's opinion. Oh, but yeah, it's in real time that there are these calculations. And yes, I'm a baseball nerd too, but I also understand this. At the beginning of all of this is somebody else's opinion. Somebody goes through and weights the value of each team, and then it lets the system do the work, right? It's somebody out there somewhere assigning value to these teams. It's the very genesis of the process. And so their opinion may not go along with that of the committee. But again, I go to this whole thing. They go and add these extra metrics to enable them to get a better feel for things. And Mississippi State is very much in the hosting discussion. And you guys want to say, well, Steve, are we hosting or not? You want a definitive answer when there is still information being gathered. I mean, we're gonna continue to play baseball through Sunday. Even if Mississippi State is no longer in the tournament, there's going to be things that change. There are going to be teams around the country that win and some lose, and that's going to impact our RPI in a positive way or a negative way. But I think, and we'll talk about this in the show, when you begin to look at teams that are similarly situated, you can find some criteria that supports Mississippi State and some that works against Mississippi State. So we're going to talk about that on the show. I want to thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company, longtime sponsors of your show. Love Bulldog Burger Company, and though I've eaten well here in Hoover, I'm ready to get back and get some spring rolls. I'm looking a little peaked, to be honest with you, and it's not just because I didn't bring my razor. I'm away from home, and I'm away from my home base and my beauty care regimen, which requires the spring rolls. I might just get two orders myself. I don't know what you look like these days. Maybe send me a selfie, and I can recommend how many spring rolls you need to kind of get back to where you want to be. It's true. But I need that great restaurant-quality hamburger that only Bulldog Burger Company can provide. I'm really thinking about the smokehouse. Yeah, I'm really, really thinking hard about the smokehouse next time I go in there. And I might even get the onion rings. Yeah, maybe. We'll see. They do onion rings well there. I'm a bit of an onion rings connoisseur, though I don't like onions. I know. I'm a riddle wrapped inside of an enigma. I get it. I also want that Nutella shake to go. You need to go have your own experience at Bulldog Burger Company, whether it be with friends or family or coworkers or whatever. There's no better place to eat, just to go break bread. Excellent quality. Excellent. Quality service, quality atmosphere, quality food. And they want you to come in there, too. You know, everybody wants your business, but I think Bulldog Burger Company earns it. Every single time I go in there, I always know there's a consistency with what they do. And I know exactly what to expect when I go in there. And I know that I'm going to be taken care of. Three great locations to serve you. University Drive in Stark Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet. Okay, so since we've been together, I'm not going to spend a lot of time belaboring this because so much has happened, right? We've already moved on. But I'll give you a quick recap. You know, we beat Texas A&M, and that was not an insignificant undertaking, right? They were the number one RPI team in the country. And it's funny, we beat them, and they remained the number one RPI team in the country. And that's one of the things, too, that's so interesting about, you know, the RPI thing. And I'm going to get more in-depth for this. It just feels like we have a higher hill to climb. And a lot of it's because we've got some quad four losses, right? And before I get too far along in the show as it relates to how we break down, you know, scheduling and things like that, here is the one thing that I'm left with, right? And some people have a different opinion, and they're welcome to that. I think if I'm Chris Lemonis, I am never, ever, 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 ever going to schedule a game against a quad 14. I'm just not going to do it. Because the way that the NCAA Division I Baseball Committee has this thing set up, and it is so incredibly based on RPI, I gain absolutely nothing by playing the Central Arkansas and the Jackson States and the Alcorn States and the Valleys and the Alabama States. I gain nothing from that. And it's a shame. It's a shame. It really is. It's kind of an indictment on the D1 committee. And I'm going to say that, and I may hurt some feelings, and that's fine too. There are some people that need to have their feelings hurt. As I've mentioned on the show before, if we really want to grow the game, you need to have a couple, 2 to 3 games that are an RPI exemption. And I don't just say that because it impacts us now, but let's just be honest about this. Okay, like teams like Mississippi Valley State and Alabama A&M and Florida A&M, they need that check that a big baseball game can provide. They need it. They need it for survival. But the way this thing is structured, it's like, you know what, guys, it doesn't matter. Because if somehow we lose one of those ball games, it may cost us the opportunity to host, which in turn costs us a ton of money. Also puts us in a less an advantageous situation when it gets this time of year. Because here we are at the end, and we go beat the number one RPI team in the country. And you have people in the National College about baseball media that say that the loss of Central Arkansas is more significant than 2 wins over Texas A&M. And so there's nothing to gain by playing these games. And in the past, I've been very much an advocate. I said, you know what, hey, we need to do this because you never know who may go in the portal one day. Not to mention, you know, it's just the right thing to do. But I am persuaded now that you can't play these games. I would rather go play, you know, four or five games against, you know, Southern Miss, UAB, maybe, even though they're a little bit down this year. You know, maybe even Louisiana Lafayette. I just go play all my midweek games against them. And even if I lose, it's better than me, you know, running the risk of losing a ball game to somebody with an RPI around 250 or 300. There's just too much to lose, and there's really nothing to gain. And so until the D1 baseball committee decides, hey, we're going to give you guys a little grace here because we want these games to get played, and we understand more times than not that the Power 5 team's going to win this, but upsets happen. But, you know, we get it. You should not be in a situation where you have to choose between, hey, what's best for baseball and what's best for Mississippi State. But that's where we are, and because that's how they've structured this thing. Because let's be honest about this. You work your way through this thing, and I can go resume to resume with just about all the teams that we're similarly situated with, and I can pick them all apart. And also, I can also make a case for each of those teams. But had we not played those games, we'd be better off not even playing anybody. Right, Notre Dame did that. Remember that in 2021? They didn't get to be a top eight national seed, but they didn't play but what, two midweek games, a couple games against Central Michigan, and called it a day. They were the number nine seed in the tournament. You remember that? And so, again, nobody has come out and issued an edict or anything, but the message is loud and clear. Don't play these schools. And more importantly, if you do play them, you better not lose. God forbid you lose, because even if you lost it way back in February, here you're going to be Memorial Day weekend having to defend that, despite the fact what you've done in the SEC tournament. And so if I'm Chris Simonis, and I'm not, but if I were, I would say, I'd call up, hey guys, I can't do it anymore. I'd love to be able to do it. You know, I know it's important to you guys. I mean, you guys got to buy baseballs. You don't have these, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars in endorsements that we do. You know, you're not able to get 10,000-15,000 people to come to one of your baseball games. You're lucky if you get a couple hundred. So we'd love to be able to share the wealth, but the way the NCAA Baseball Committee has structured this thing, I just can't afford to do it. I can't afford to be in a situation where I have to go take my team on the road as a number two because of the fact that your team and your RPI has been an anchor to our season. I just can't do it. And that's where we are. And it's sad. It is. But I think this is a situation where the NCAA committee has to act, and maybe it's next year. Come out next year and say, listen, hey, we want Texas to play Texas Southern. We want those kids to have a good experience. You know, I was talking, I won't say who, I was talking to a guy that's in the college baseball media just yesterday, and he played at a mid-major team. And I won't give you the states or the details because I won't embarrass the guy. But he told me that was the highlight of his college career, was being able to play a named college team in a minor league ballpark. And he goes, that was like the greatest thing ever. He goes, you know what? He goes, we knew we were never going to Omaha. We knew that we were never going to win a regional if we were fortunate enough to get there. He goes, man, the biggest thing for us was our conference tournament. He goes, but I look back, and he goes, you know what? Hey, I got to play against this guy that went on to be a first rounder. I got to play against this guy that went on to work his way up through the minors and made the show. And I got to go play them in a minor league ballpark. You know, but the NCAA committee is saying, you know what? Hey, son, that's a great memory, but nah. It's not worth it for that team to play you guys. You know, you're not good enough to play with them. That's really what you're saying. It's like, Steve, you're kind of putting words in their mouth. No, I'm just telling you, this is where we are. This is the system and the situation the D1 baseball committee has created. And so if you're Chris Simonis, you can't worry about what's best for college baseball. Ever. As a matter of fact, that should never be a thought that crosses your mind any day moving forward. Period. You got to do what's best for Mississippi State. And if that means not even playing a full schedule, then that's what it means. You can't do it anymore. You just can't. So back to that big win over A&M. And again, I'm not going to break down the whole game here. But it was a huge win for us. And it's so interesting. There were so many people that were like, you know what, hey, Mississippi State's going to lose this game, probably lose the next game to Vanderbilt and Tennessee, and they'll go to the house. I don't think anybody had us winning two in Hoover, but we have. And what a fun game it was. And Nate Dohm earns the win. Chris Cortez, the fireballer, gets the loss. And I've seen some guys here in Hoover that can throw the ball really, really hard, but don't have a complimentary pitch. They can't keep people off the fastball. But you know, we get into this ball game here, and you know, it's nothing doing for either team in the first, and we get into the second, and Amani, who's had a good tournament. I mean, he's not going to make the all-tournament team, but Amani's had some pretty big swings for us, and he gets on base and comes around on the wild pitch there. It's a 1-0 ball game, and I think that really settled us a little bit. You know, the crowd really got into it, and Bulldog fans that have been here have been absolutely amazing. I love each and every one of you. I do. Even those of you that don't subscribe to my website, even though you should. Love you anyway. Maybe at one point you'll come be with us. But we're kind of coming along there, and you know, we're pitching the ball pretty well. I didn't think Cal had his best stuff, but you know, we're kind of grinding it out. And then Mercy, on the very first pitch of his second at bat, hits an absolute laser over the wall and left to put State up 3-0. And I can tell you, there were some people in the National College Baseball media sitting on the row ahead of me that began to really squirm in their seats. It's true. They may not admit it, but it's true. It's like, oh, look at this. Yeah, Mississippi State being a fly in the ointment for sure. All right, in the home half of the inning, A&M gets on the board, and this could have been a much bigger inning for them. We kind of grounded our way through it and got out of it, only surrendering the one run. You know, Laviolette on a fielder's choice there. So it's a ground ball out. The run scores. And I tell you what, this Camarillo kid from A&M, he has had some really big games against Mississippi State. He's not you never hear his name mentioned, right? He plays shortstop for them, and all the talk is about the top four in that order. But he's had some big swings against State. All right, so it's 3-1 going to the sixth. And then Appel, who is a guy that's kind of an unsung hero in this A&M lineup. You know, it's the RBI sack fly. Laviolette scores. That's a 3-2 ball game. And again, that could have been an inning, could have got away from us, but we kind of grind our way through it. In the sixth, they tie it, of course, with the double to left center shot. Another guy that's got some talent, but kind of an unheralded player on this team. And Montgomery scores. We did a really good job against Braden Montgomery. And again, I go back to this whole thing with Justin Parker's ability to scout and to be able to put a game plan together. Braden Montgomery had four bats in this ballgame. Three of them were hit exactly to the same spot. All three of them. One of them was 105 off the bat, and Dave Marchand catches it to one hopper and throws him out. The one hit he did have was just kind of a Texas leaguer to right field. So, again, that's Justin Parker just kind of picking people apart and saying, you know what, we're going to make you uncomfortable. We're going to throw things in the zone that you don't like, and we're going to force you to hit it, or you can sit there and take a strike. And so really good job against him. But, you know, this situation here, the one time he did get on base, he comes around to score. And then there's drama in the ninth. And Connor Hyzak has been kind of the ninth inning hero for State. As you guys know, he walked off Ole Miss with a two-run shot with two outs in the ninth on Tuesday, final game on Tuesday. And he comes through here, and guys, bases loaded, and Ashenbeck might be the best reliever in the country. And it's not because he's a fireballer, even though he has a fireball with some sink in it. Now, that fastball comes at you. It's not just a flat velo, right? There's some movement to everything he does. But because his changeup tunnels so well from the fastball arm slot, this is a guy that really trusts the grip. You know, the arm action is the same. The arm speed is the same. And I don't know that the casual fan understands how difficult it is to do what Connor Hyzak did in this situation. Most people would just get a bat on that and tap it back to the pitcher. Other guys might be able to even get it as far as the second baseman. But Connor Hyzak goes down, and again, it just kind of illustrates how strong he is. He's able to kind of rifle that thing back up the box, and nobody can get to it. It gets by Ashenbeck, gets in the outfield, two-run score. The most endearing image of that scenario is Dave Marchand's face as he crosses home plate and looks back at Connor to say, "Dude, we did it." And, of course, Tyler Davis comes out, and that was absolutely filthy. And Mississippi State fans were then kind of feeling their oats about where things stand. It's like, oh, we're not going to host? Okay, you're telling me Texas A&M is the best team in the country? That's fine. We'll go beat them, right? And that's why a lot of people, and even some people that have some influence, have told me, hey, if they beat A&M, they're in, no matter what happens the rest of the tournament. We'll see how the committee interprets that. We'll see. But looking back at the numbers for this ball game, they weren't great. The numbers that mattered the most are runs scored. Bryce Chance goes 1-for-3, but Dave Marchand, and we needed to get David going, and we did against A&M. 3-for-4, 2 RBI, two runs. Of course, the big fly there, one strikeout. Tough night for Hunter Hines and Dakota Jordan, and that's kind of lost in, it's like the glee of winning. It's like, you know, we need our stars to shine bright, and they haven't so far in Hoover. I'm optimistic that they will as we kind of move forward. And I really wish some of our fans, you know, it's okay for us to vent among ourselves, but let's not go get on social media and trash our own players. Let's have a little class. Hizak, 1-for-3, of course, the big two RBI there. And then Imani Larry, big night for Imani, 3-for-5, and scores the one run there. But it just seems like Imani was kind of the catalyst. Logan Culler, 1-for-4 in the ballgame, and State with 9 hits. And, of course, when you start thinking about what Imani and Rashawn did, your middle infielder is kind of carrying the weight there. You know, 6 of the 9 hits. Looking at pitching numbers here, and again, I didn't think Cal had his best stuff. He goes 5 innings, 3 hits, 3 runs, all of them earned, 2 walks, 4 strikeouts. And I saw some people saying, hey, you know, Steve, why it takes him so long to get a strikeout. Guys, in this big ballpark, when you've got a rise fastball the way Cal Steven does, I would much rather have that 2-pitch flyout than that 7-pitch strikeout. You know, it's kind of like, well, we didn't hit any home runs, but we scored 10 runs. You know, I just want to win ball games, right? And pitch efficiency sometimes requires you to get easy outs rather than strikeouts. And Cal's, you know, pitch count got up a little bit, but, you know, hey, it's a no decision for him. I didn't think he had his best stuff, but hey, he goes out there and does a job for us. Tyson Harding comes in, goes 1 inning, allows 1 hit, 1 walk, 1 strikeout. I didn't think Tyson was especially sharp in the ball game, but again, he does a job and kind of passes the baton to Nate Dome. And how great is it to see him back? Our former Friday night guy is back just in time for the postseason. He works 2 innings and earns the win in relief. Allows 1 hit, has 1 strikeout. And again, that's 2 innings with 25 pitches. Again, pitch efficiency there. He gets 2 flyouts and 3 groundouts. That'll get it done. I'm getting 6 outs with 25 pitches and not allowing a run, and I only give up 1 base runner. That dog will hunt. Tyler Davis gets his 5th save. He is absolutely filthy, and he's perfect there in the 9th. Guys, he gets him out on 9 pitches. Absolutely outstanding effort. Absolutely outstanding effort. And Texas A&M head coach Jim Schlossnagel did not meet with the media following the ballgame. Said he didn't want to talk to anybody. I've never been in a situation where Chris Amonis that's happened. Never in a situation where that's happened with Gary Henderson or Andy Cannizzaro or John Cohen. Never been in that situation before. Ever. I get it, but we're not children. We're adults. We're professionals. And sometimes you got to go out there and answer difficult questions after a tough loss. But, guys, this Mississippi State won this ball game. Texas A&M didn't lose this ball game. Mississippi State won it. Nobody gave State anything whatsoever. All right, again, no top 10 list today. So the next segment of the show is brought to you by Campus Bookmart. No, that's not right. I'm out of order here. It's Close with Blair. Close with Blair, our friend Blair Chandler, our mortgage professional friend. If you're looking to kind of just get started in life, maybe you've graduated, maybe you've got a couple of years of experience under your belt, maybe you've been able to save a little bit towards a down payment. Not that you have to have one, but it's always very helpful. And you're thinking, you know what, Steve, maybe I want to find like a condo to kind of get life started rather than to kind of throw my money away renting. Maybe I'm ready to buy a house. Maybe I want to buy a game day condo. Listen, let me just tell you the person that can help you make that happen. It's Blair Chandler at closewithblair.com. That's C-L-O-S-E with Blair. BLAIR.com. Give him a call or text today at 601-500-2344. Again, 601-500-2344. All right, so let's get into the second game here. And you guys, I want you to respect the sacrifice here because of all the noise here in a hotel room. I've had to turn the air conditioner off. And it's been awfully humid the last couple days. It feels okay in here, but I'll be honest with you, it's a little stuffy. All right, so game number 2, we take on Vanderbilt. And, you know, we took the series against them, but Mississippi State and Vanderbilt are equal in many respects. So we knew this would be a nip-and-tuck ball game. We expected that. And it's interesting, you know, Vanderbilt has kind of feasted on other teams' midweek pitching in their earlier two games. Oh, this Vanderbilt offense is on fire. Well, not really. And I fully expected State to either win the ball game or lose a very close one. I did not think they'd be able to come out there and put up a bunch of runs against us. That's how I saw it. And that's how it turned out. But, you know, let's go through this kind of here. We'll go quickly as well. I know you guys.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
I've got to get to the ballpark here in a little bit, but anyway, just kind of running this thing down. Wasn't a lot of scoring in this ball game, so we'll go quickly in our play-by-play. But, man, Gerangelo is absolutely filthy. Comes out and strikes out the side in the first. All of it swinging. And, guys, they were missing those pitches by a foot or more. It's ridiculous, especially that slider. All right, bottom of first. Chance strikes out looking. Mercy singles through the right side there to kind of get us going. And then Hizak's hit by the pitch. We got first, Mercy, first, and second. You think, okay, here we go. Gerangelo seems to be feeling it. Yeah, maybe we can make some things happen here. Of course, Hunter Hines has moved down in the order to seventh. Dakota from third to fourth kind of shook some things up there. And you got runners at first and second. One out and thinking, you know what? If we get a base hit here, we can score a run and kind of get out early and give Gerangelo a little bit of lift. DJ strikes out on 3 pitchings, and then Logan Kohler strikes out on 3 pitches. So we don't do anything with it. Those are the kinds of things that add up over a ball game. Every pitch matters. You know, everybody's like, well, we'll get them later. Guys, again, in a 9-inning game, I'm only guaranteed 27 outs. That's all I'm guaranteed, right? And then if I can get mercy rule too and get out of here in 21. Every out is precious. Can't give outs away. All right, Gerangelo again, 1-2-3, strikes out the side again there in a second. Bulldogs come in. Larry pops up to short. Hines fouls out to the catcher. And then Powell comes through with a 2-out base hit. So again, traffic on the bases for State. And Johnny Long strikes out swinging. And we, you know, obviously, there's a little more risk-reward with guys like DJ and Hunter because they can run into something and turn a game around. Johnny Long is struggling at the plate exceptionally poorly as well. It's just one of those things. And when he comes up in the order, you're just kind of hoping he can move runners. And I can't answer it. But we're just not getting any offensive production from about 3 spots right now. Top of third. And this is really, in many respects, really kind of set the tone for the game. And I give Tim Corbin a lot of credit here. They really put us in a very stressful situation here. Holcomb singles up the middle on a 1-2 count. And maybe we catch a little bit too much to plate there. We get behind in that count 1-0, come back with a couple swinging strikes, a foul ball, and then a single back up the middle. You get a punch out here, it's maybe a different conversation today because of the fact they did a really good job here. Rogers, left-handed hitter, comes up. You know he's probably bunting to sacrifice the guy along to kind of give a situation for Gerangelo to have to do something besides just rock and fire. And a lot of times you do that. You make a guy fill his position to kind of change the rhythm. And Rogers did what great hitters do. You don't just sack here. You're going to try to drag this thing along and get a hit. And then we don't execute a bunt defense here. When Hunter ranges off the bag there, Amani's got to get over. He does. He'll tell you the same. He has got to get over. And instead, Gerangelo gets it. And then we have our pitcher diving to make a tag. And what if he gets injured there, guys? And Gerangelo only knows one speed. He's just trying to play baseball. But he should never have been put in that situation. You have got to execute a bunt defense. That's one of the most basic things we do. And so Amani blew it. Okay, he did. And again, Amani's had a great weekend or a great week so far. That's a situation there. You got to make a play. And of course, that run comes around to score. You know, they do get a sack bunt down here, move both guys along, second and third. And then Vastine's hit by the pitch. Now I'm just kind of hoping that maybe we can get a ground ball and turn it. But instead, Diaz singles to left and 2 runs score. And, of course, the bunt. The bunt scores. That run mattered. And then, lo and behold, we do get Austin to ground into a double play there. And so we get out of it. But, again, you know, hey, You execute a bunt defense here? Think about that for a second, right? Maybe it's a one-run inning instead of two. Because, you know, Hewitt's not going to put a sack bunt down. You know, not going to do that, right, with one on and one out. Every play matters over the course of a ball game. Everybody says, well, it always boils down to the ninth. No, this is when the game changed right here. And then we're chasing the game. And instead it goes 1-2-3 there in the third. Top of four, Durangelo comes back and kind of finds it, gets a couple of strikeouts. We did a really good job against Espinal last night. And he had a really good weekend against us up in Nashville. But we get Espinal and Barcy, and then Polk singles to right field, and we get Holcomb a strikeout swinging. So bottom of four, we get a fly out from DJ, and really a good at bat here. You know, it's like it doesn't net us a hit, but he hit the ball well. And I think one of the things that we're doing, I think mechanically, I think we're dropping our shoulder a little bit, trying to change the launch angle a little bit. I think right now we're going to simplify things to try to hit line drives. And, of course, everybody's throwing the rise fastball, so sometimes you hit the bottom half of the baseball and you get loft. But we got to get on top of some baseballs. We do. Then Kohler singles through the left side, and then Larry flies out to center, and then we get Kohler to second, and Hines is up. And you think, heck, hey, just give me a ground the ball through the right side, and we get a run here, cut this lead in half, but Hines goes down swinging. All right, top of five. We open up with a leadoff walk. And how many times have you heard me say it? Leadoff walks are of the devil. It's true. And then Hewitt singles through the right side. Now you got a situation, you got first and third situation here. Wild pitch, run scores. And again, it goes back to the leadoff walk. These things matter. They do. We don't execute a bunt defense in the third, costs us a run. We come out and walk the leadoff hitter, it costs us a run. And it ends up being a one-run ball game. It's nuts. And it's never just about defense. It's never just about pitching. It's never just about hitting. Everything works together in concert. But these are things right here in situations like these when you're playing postseason baseball against a team like Vanderbilt, you just can't do. And then Hewitt ends up stealing second. You know, of course, he moves up on the wild pitch there. And Vastine flies out to center, which moves the runner to third. And then we're able to get a ground ball and get out of this thing. So we minimize the damage there. But again, the leadoff walk comes around to score. It's true. All right, bottom of five, you know, State grounds out. And then we get a walk to Bryce Chance, who has kind of had a tough week. And then Rashawn, grounds out. That's the inning. Top of six and 1-2-3 inning again for Lowe here. And he gets Espinal swinging again. So quick inning there, and we get the bottom of six. Hysack doubles to left center. And this is a kid I think is making some money right now. But here we go. You get a leadoff double, and you're thinking, hey, we've got to get this run home. We got to get this run home. This is our chance to kind of get back in this thing. And it just once you kind of break the lid, you know, you break the seal a little bit, you start thinking, okay, all right, here we go. All right, way to go. Big hit sack comes through there with a double. And DJ strikes out swinging, and then Kohler pops up to first. And right here I'm thinking, we're about to waste this leadoff double. But lo and behold, Imani Larry comes through again. And again, Imani's having a good week at the plate. And just kind of sprays that ball to right center. And Connor comes around to score. And I don't know if there's anybody playing harder than David Mershon and Connor Hysack right now. I mean, those guys are really playing hard. He dug it all the way around. Makes it a 3-1 ball game. And again, Hines strikes out swinging. You're thinking here, okay, we've kind of broken through here. And I know I keep thinking at any moment, like Hunter Hines is just going to hit one 455 feet because he has that kind of ability. I'm thinking right here after this, it's like, hey, we've got a couple of hits in the inning. You get the big two-out base hit. Maybe this ignites the offense. Give them some credit for making some pitches. But right here I'm thinking, man, if Hunter could ever get into one, right here would be a good time. Instead, we don't there. So we get to the seventh. Bring in Gavin Black. And what does he do? Do you remember? What does he do? He walks the leadoff hitter. Walks the leadoff hitter. Leadoff walks are of the devil. And when you're the reliever and you come in and walk the first guy you see, those walks are from the pits of Hades. And lo and behold, what do you get? You get a sack bunt to move the guy to second. And what do? They come through with a single through the right side, and we're a little late getting over there, and the run scores. So there's a leadoff walk again coming back to haunt you. I mean, it's like it's one of the basic tenets of baseball. You cannot come out of there and walk people out of the bullpen. And I'm not beating up on Gavin Black here. He just happened to be the pitcher at the moment. You absolutely cannot. What that tells me is he wasn't ready to come in. You weren't ready. But, you know, we minimize the damage, you get out of this thing. But, you know, Bastine strikes out swinging, and then Diaz strikes out swinging. So we give up the one run there. But here we are, right? You start working through these. The four runs that Vanderbilt had, one gets on base and scores because we don't execute a bunt defense, a pretty basic bunt defense that they run in high school and everywhere else, right? Bunt to the right side. Second base has got to get over and cover the bag. It's not a big trick play. And then lo and behold, you walk the leadoff runner, and then they score. And this is what happens. This is what you – when you play good baseball teams, this is what happens. It's 4-1. All right, bottom of seventh, they bring in Carter for Thompson. The word around the ballpark day before was that Holt was going to start. Now they're holding him to get them to Sunday. But Thompson did a good job for him. He did. So Grayson Carter comes in, and he is a one-pitch pitcher. Absolutely is. Now, in this league, you got some people that can throw it hard, but you got some guys that are Major League Baseball prospects. They can turn that thing around. When you don't have a complimentary pitch you can throw for a strike, people are just going to sit dead red fastball. I don't care if you throw it 97, 98. At some point, you can get got too. Grayson Carter doesn't scare me. And here's one state kind of gets some things going here. And again, kind of a wet, another opportunity. But we had a chance to make a difference in this ball game. We've talked about, hey, we didn't execute our defensive play. We didn't throw strikes at a high rate early in counts and early in innings. And now here we are where the offense needed to come through and, again, didn't. Powell flies out to center. Long pops up to first base. So we get a little two-out rally going here. Chance reaches on the throwing error and goes to second. And, again, that's a ball that's kind of tapped along the right side there. The pitcher has to cover, and then his momentum is just kind of carrying him towards the line. He overthrows it. And then Mershon walks. And gets ahead 3-0 in the count. And then they walk Isaac on four pitches. When I said to Benjamin Rosenberg from the dispatch, I said, if Isaac gets up in this inning and he gets something, a fastball to hit from Grayson Carter, the story is about to change. Instead, they kind of pitch around him. And they bring in Ginther to pitch to DJ. And if you don't know much about Ginther, if you don't, a lot of people just don't watch a lot of college baseball until we play people. But Ginther, even though he has a good fastball, the book on him is the changeup. Because, again, a guy that can throw a changeup and change speeds on you from the same arm slot with the same arm speed is immeasurably good. To be honest with you, it's better than the fireballer in many situations because of the fact you're going to get a lot more swing and miss. And DJ strikes out swinging. And you're just thinking right here, I don't need the grand slam. If you just give me a single in the gap, we're going to get a couple runs in. And we don't score. We don't score. So, again, there's enough blame to go around. It's a 4-3 ball game at the end. But you look at this thing and say, you know what? At some point in every inning, there was something we could have done better. Offensively, defensively, pitching-wise, it's true. Our top of the eighth, Cam gives up a double down the line. Kind of an unfortunate situation, too. He's 1-2 there. And the guy just kind of threw the bat at it. R.J. Austin's a good player. But he gets Aspinall to strike out swinging. Tough night for Aspinall. They bring in Koziel to hit for Barcy. He goes down swinging. And then Polk goes down swinging. So good outing here. And again, Cam Schulke, one of the more competitive guys on the team, gives up a leadoff double. And he goes, you know what? Not on my watch, guys. No. And strikes out the side. Bottom of eight. We get the leadoff walk, Logan Kohler. And what do we talk about? When Bulldogs get walked to leadoff innings, those are gifts from God. They really are. Those are gifts from God. We didn't take advantage of it, though. Larry, lengthy at bat there, flies out to right field. I was hoping we'd get a walk there. And then Hines comes up, one on, one out, and grounds out the first. It kind of works like a bunt. So you're just thinking here, maybe Joe Powell can get us a hit. We can score Kohler, but instead we pop up to the first baseman. So a lot of non-productive outs there in that inning. All right, top of nine. Here we go. What do we do, guys? We walk the leadoff hitter on four pitches after striking out the side. Rogers then reaches on a fielder's choice. And basically, guys, we got back-to-back ground balls that should have been double plays in this inning. We did. We couldn't execute them. And some of that's personnel, but you know, we get a ground ball, and should be a 4-6-3. The scoop throw, kind of shoveling that ball to second, it's a little bit off target and high, disrupts the turn. The inning continues, right? Hewitt Ground ball to short. We get it to second and just can't turn it. And so back-to-back. So Cam's doing a job here. And then lo and behold, he picks Hewitt off first. And, man, I tell you what, I thought he had him a couple times. But when they finally got him, there was no doubt. And on the Vanderbilt side of this, that is absolutely inexcusable. Absolutely inexcusable. Especially when it's not like you've just been watching from the dugout. Shoki's been getting closer and closer and closer to picking you off. And at that point, in a 4-1 ball game, that run means everything, right? Right, because at that point, if you get that run around, then one swing can't beat you. One swing may tie you on a grand slam. Not that we expect that, or you can count on that. But this is absolutely, absolutely unacceptable to get picked off here. And I don't want to go Augie Garrido on you, but how do you get picked off first base in that situation? Especially when he's closer and closer and closer. It showed a little low baseball IQ there. And credit to Cam Schulke. All right, bottom of nine, we get a little drama here. And that's been the case for the Bulldogs and Hoover all week, that the nine inning has kind of belonged to the Bulldogs. And you're thinking, you know what, if we can just get a couple guys on base here, maybe the Maroon Magic shows up again. So we pinch hit here. Ethan Pulliam comes in and pitch hits for Johnny Long. And we get ahead in the count 1-0, and then he skies the ball to right field. And again, that's that Rise fastball. He hits that ball hard. Really does. Comes in off the bench, hadn't been playing. But it's an out. And then Bryce Chance comes up, similar situation. Just a fly ball to right field, and you think, okay, well, this is it, guys. Let's gather our stuff. And then Dave Marchand's like, not so fast. And he singled that ball back up the middle. And then Connor Hyzak, again, and I tweeted that out, Mr. Ninth Inning himself, Connor Hyzak, he tripled the left center. And, guys, when he rounded first, I don't think Cheeseburg could have stopped him with a gun. When he rounded second and he knew that ball was at the wall, Connor Hyzak was trying to win a baseball game for Mississippi State, folks. That wasn't about Connor Hyzak playing for the draft. That wasn't about Connor Hyzak doing something for himself. He's like, you know what? I've driven a run in. Let me make it easier here. Let's ignite the crowd, ignite our offense. And right now, Connor Hyzak is the best player on this team. No doubt about it. Now it's a 4-2 ball game. We bring in Nate Chester to pinch hit for Stevens, who came in to play defense in place of Dakota Jordan. After that tough at bat, they made the decision to pull him. I don't know all the details behind it, but the bottom line is this. Nate Chester, given an opportunity here, gets down in an 0-2 count. We're down to our last strike, and what do you know? Nate Chester lines a single to right field. The run scores. Now it's a 4-3 ball game, and the tying run is on base, and the winning run comes to the plate in the form of one Logan Kohler. Swing and a miss, and Logan's trying to knock it out of the ballpark there. You know, he really is. And then we get a ground out to second base, and that's your ball game. And we lose 4-3. I will commend the guys for not quitting, but again, this game really boiled down to over the course of the game, there were some mistakes that Mississippi State made that Vanderbilt took advantage of, and when Vanderbilt made some mistakes, Mississippi State did not. So it's not just an indictment on the offense. It's an indictment all the way around. It's a team loss. Looking back here, Bryce Chance goes 0-for-4, had the one walk there, and then reached on an error. Dave Marchand goes 2-for-4, a run scored, also a walk, so he reaches bases 3 times in 5 plate appearances. Connor Hyzak, 2-for-3, 2 runs scored, also had an RBI, and then walked another time. And right now, I like Connor Hyzak hitting third right now. I think that's great. Dakota Jordan goes 0-for-4 with 3 Ks. You know, earlier in this tournament, you know, he was hitting the ball. Not much to show for it, but he was hitting the ball with some authority and just kind of having some bad luck. You can definitely tell he's pressing right now. Nate Chester goes 1-for-1 in the ball game and gets an RBI. Good for you, Nate. Logan Kohler goes 1-for-4. Imani Larry, 1-for-4. Hunter Hines, 0-for-4 with a couple of punch-outs. Joe Powell goes 1-for-4. Johnny Long, 0-for-3. And, of course, Ethan Pulliam, 0-for-1. Looking at pitching numbers here. Durangelo now 8-2 on the year, charged with the loss. Goes 6 innings, 5 hits, 3 runs, 1 walk, 10 strikeouts. And, of course, 6 of those 10 came the first 6 batters that he faced. And also had a wild pitch, also had a hit-by-pitch at 88 pitches. And, you know, we get it out of here. But he pitched well enough to win, even though there are some things that he could have done better. Gavin Black, 1 inning pitched, 1 hit, 1 run. Of course, that leadoff walk, the first guy you face, you walk him and he comes around and scores. The baseball gods are watching. Cam Schulke comes in, goes 2 innings, 1 hit, 1 walk. So that's your ball game. And, again, it just feels like a lot of our people are like, you know, well, it just erases everything else we've done. It has not. And but that's kind of where things stand right now. So we're going to take a quick break and we'll come back and we'll talk about where things stand. and kind of what needs to happen, and we'll preview Tennessee in our final segment of the show. All right, that segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. Campus Bookmart, a great place to do business. You know, I'm a big advocate to shop and eat local. If you want to support a Starkville business, because we know you love Starkville, then look no further than Campus Bookmart. They have the best selection of Mississippi State merchandise in the known universe. It's true. You can test them on that. Next time you're in town, go by and see their smiling faces. A lovely, talented Susie, Miss Kathy Brown, everybody up there doing a great job for a great fan base. If you can't make it to town, let me again encourage you, rather than go to Amazon and support some company that will never spend a dime or invest any money in Starkville or in Mississippi State, visit them on the World Wide Web at campusbookmart.net. And by being a loyal Boneyard listener, we'll give you a phrase that pays. That's BSR. It stands for Beautiful Steve Robertson. Gets you free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than 75 bones, absolutely incomplete. And they will have some NCAA tournament shirts very, very soon. Be prepared for that, whether we are home or away. Your post-game gear, your one-stop shop for that is Campus Bookmart. Okay, let's take a look at the SEC bracket and kind of see where we are. And we'll take a look at some RPI stuff as well. So today's first elimination game will take place 3 o'clock today. Kentucky and South Carolina. We didn't play either of these teams. But I'm pulling for Kentucky here because South Carolina, of course, a little bit farther ahead of us in the RPI. And some people are harping on RPI. But South Carolina, of course, you know, it gets beat yesterday by LSU late. Very exciting game. But, yeah, the rooting interest here is Kentucky. That is because of the fact that we can't catch Kentucky. However, we can catch South Carolina. And State certainly needs to win. But it's interesting. Now, the winner of this game will take on LSU. And if you have kept up with any of my coverage last week, LSU was kind of my surprise pick. The one team I thought could win this thing that wasn't in top four was LSU. They have figured some things out pitching-wise. Now, that said, they don't have much pitching left. And so whoever wins this game today between Kentucky and South Carolina could find themselves playing for a tournament championship on Sunday. But I will tell you this about the Tigers, the way they have swung the bats this week, whoever gets them as a number two is going to be very, very angry. They have the defending NAFL champs to come in. They've kind of figured it out. And again, you know, they had the series sweep over Ole Miss. And then, of course, they've come into Hoover red hot. They have swung a hot bat. So I would not want to play LSU right now because you got to think, too, that you know they're not going to see SEC pitching in a regional. And if they get sent somewhere like Oregon State or Indiana State, there may be blood in the streets. That's a true story. But, again, we're pulling for Kentucky because it would put South Carolina behind us. Not that South Carolina can host. In many respects, they're just not part of the hosting discussion. But with so many people out there harping on the fact that State needs to be in the top 20 RPI, that would be a small step in that direction. Of course, Mississippi State's going to play Tennessee. We'll break that down a little bit later. But, you know, Vanderbilt and LSU entered the week, you know, in a five-way tie with 13 and 17 in the league. And some people can say, well, Steve, could LSU play their way into a host? No, 1 week of good play does not erase a pretty mediocre season. So you're not going to have a 13 and 17 SEC team host. It's not going to happen. And that's important to kind of understand. I've seen some social media traffic. Can LSU host? No, they can't host. You're going to be a number two. Baseball at Alex Box Stadium this year is finished. But, you know, the fact that you had South Carolina, Alabama, LSU, who else was in there with them? Alabama, South Carolina, Vanderbilt, LSU. Hell, I can't remember the other one. But LSU and Vanderbilt have obviously taken care of business. Maybe I can look back at the bracket and jog the memory a little bit here. Florida was the other team. Yeah, they've been eliminated so long, I've almost forgotten about them. But so, again, Florida goes out on – Florida and Alabama go out first. So that makes life a little bit easier for the rest of these teams because, ironically, everybody that went on Tuesday also won on Wednesday. And then, of course, you had the top four conference tournament seeds playing in elimination games yesterday. And so two of the top four are gone. And if I'm Arkansas, I'm worried. I'm going to be honest with you. If A&M, I'm not so much. Because A&M, you know, played in some competitive ball games up here. But when you begin to kind of work through this thing with Arkansas, offensively, it's a real challenge. and they're still figuring out some things. Pitching-wise, Mason Molina looked like he's put up about 40 pounds since he got up there on Arkansas. The stamina's not there, and you start thinking Arkansas is not in a position where they can win a slugfest. They just don't have the offense to do it, and outside of Hagan Smith, they really haven't had pitching that's been very consistent this year. And then Hagan Smith did not look good yesterday, and there was some discussion about his health. You know, is he healthy? You know, we'll see. We'll see how it all plays out. But I am concerned if I'm Arkansas as you enter as the number two seed, and then you're out of here quickly. You lose to a 13-17 South Carolina team, and then you lose to Kentucky. And again, everybody keeps waiting for Kentucky to fall. Kentucky may fall in Omaha. But that's how it looks in the bracket right now. So Vanderbilt and LSU at the hotel resting today, as Kentucky and South Carolina and Tennessee and Mississippi State will both play an elimination game. And Tennessee and Kentucky really with nothing to gain. And I think South Carolina's done enough. They're going to be a solid number two somewhere. And Mississippi State, obviously, the team that needs to win the most today is Mississippi State. I think if you win today, and it feels like the hurdles keep getting raised, right? If you win today, I think the discussion is over, because even if you lose tomorrow to Vanderbilt, you're going to remain in the top 20. You get a win over Tennessee, probably elevates you a couple spots in the RPI. You lose to Vanderbilt, and there you are. You know, so that's kind of where we stand with every bit of that in the SEC. Let's look now at the RPI. Some interesting results yesterday, and I could sit here and gripe about this RPI thing all day. But Kentucky now back up to the number one RPI spot in the college baseball RPI, according to Warren Nolan. Texas A&M drops to number two. North Carolina is three. Tennessee is four. And even with the loss today, Tennessee is going to remain a top eight national seed. And I think, you know, Arkansas is a five RPI. But the thing that I think about with this whole Arkansas thing, they will probably be a top eight national seed. And they probably deserve to be. But they are a team with a lot of question marks. And so I think who they get, maybe not in a regional, but in a super, could determine their fate. Because, you know, playing at Baum Walker, it is a bit of a launching pad. It's not Alex Box. It's not Foley Field. But DePark really plays offensive to left-handed hitters. And so I think they're good enough to win at home. But you start thinking, if they drop a regional game, let's say they win with Hagan Smith, And you probably have to consider, you know what, hey, maybe I throw a number two in if I'm playing a four, and then bring Smith out to give me a winner's bracket game, and then I can figure it out. But if Arkansas ever gets in that loser's bracket, even at home, they could be in trouble. Georgia's sitting there at six. And what's interesting to Georgia, too, and again, I think the fact that Georgia sits at six actually is beneficial to Mississippi State. Because if I'm Scott Strickland and I sit down and say, okay, and listen, our thoughts and prayers go out to Scott Strickland and his family, his dad, that earlier this week. But from what I'm told, he will be available for the discussions for the NCAA committee. And if you know Scott, you wouldn't expect anything less, even though it would be perfectly understandable if Scott needed to be with his family. I mean, it's a traumatic thing. It absolutely is. But I think if you're Scott Strickland, you can say, you know what? You know, outside of the fact that Georgia has the better RPI, Mississippi State and Georgia are very similar. And I went down and broke down the Georgia non-conference schedule today. Really the only – they beat Georgia Tech, which is what an RPI 48. The only big RPI win they have out of conference is over Clemson. And that's big. It is, because Clemson's sitting right there at number seven. But if you run down a non-con schedule, it's not good. As a matter of fact, let's do that together real quick here. Because that's the big thing. You know, everybody's like, yeah, but Steve, you know, State's non-conference schedule. Let's run through Georgia's non-conference schedule. And again, it's so interesting how all this kind of shakes loose. I think it's important for people to kind of understand this stupid thing will come on. It's having to do these, you know, everybody wants you to read their ads. I really don't. And I know we deal with some of that stuff too. But anyway, here's the non-con schedule for Georgia this year. And their non-conference record is 22-1. 22-1. But let's look and see who they played here. UNC Asheville, RPI of 226. Georgia State, RPI of 109. Northern Kentucky, RPI of 157. Presbyterian, 189. Michigan State, 106. And they actually lost that game. Georgia Tech, they play a couple games against them, RPI of 48. Georgia Southern, we played them. What in the hell is this?
No need to chase your pet's meds all over town.
Stupid. I apologize. I didn't know that was going to happen. Again, I apologize. But so Georgia Tech, RPI 48. Georgia Southern, a team that we played, RPI 55. Stetson, RPI of 111. Northern Colorado, four games against Northern Colorado. They won them all, RPI of 280. Iowa, expected to win the Big Ten, RPI of 104. They finished the year 29-23. Wofford, RPI of 51. Mercer, RPI of 108. Georgia State, RPI of 109. Kennesaw State, 83. And, of course, the big win over Clemson, 7. Another win over Kennesaw State, 83. You know, so you start running down through all this, and it's like this Georgia non-conference schedule is just kind of we thought at first blush, the season not kind to that non-con schedule, but there they are at number 6. You say, well, Steve, how does that help us? I think you can say, hey, you know, listen, Georgia and Mississippi State are essentially the same team. State's got a handful of quad four losses. That's really the difference. But the understanding is, hey, they had the same record in the SEC, 17-13. State beat them head-to-head, 2 out of 3, and probably should have swept that series. And then Georgia goes 1-and-done at Hoover, and Mississippi State still playing and about to play their fourth game of the tournament today. So I think you can make the case that you should take both of them. SEC is the top RPI conference. Not any question. You look at all the RPI teams in the top 20 from the SEC, and then there's Mississippi State in that same league, a league that you call the best league in America, as the 5 seed in a conference tournament that they're still alive in. And so I think there's a case that can be made for that. And again, everybody keeps pointing to quad four losses, and those midweek games matter. And we hear that all the time, midweeks don't matter. Yes, they do, because Mississippi State did not get swept a single weekend this season. And so, again, I go back to the opening parts of the show. Yeah, you need to win that game, but you may be better off just not even playing those games. And I go back to this whole East Carolina thing. They didn't play Campbell. They canceled the game at 10 in the morning. It rained, I think, a half inch at 9:30 at night. And Campbell has beaten ECU 5 straight times. I wonder if that had anything to do with the weather forecast. My take on that. But you also say, don't cancel those games. Well, they canceled it, so they shouldn't be rewarded. We played the game and took the RPI hit. And think about if we had canceled that game and hadn't taken that 3-point drop in the RPI, we're in the teens right now. East Carolina right now, 18 in the RPI, State 21. So it's not that big a jump, right? But we're not going to make a decision on what's happened today. And, of course, East Carolina loses in the tournament yesterday. And maybe we can get through this. Let me just mute this just in case. Nah, I can't do that. Let's look at the East Carolina baseball schedule. Or better yet, let's just go over to the AAC tournament bracket. Maybe we won't get a pop-up ad there. But East Carolina could drop even further because, as we mentioned earlier in the week, you know, because of their non-conference schedule and the fact that their conference tournament is really comprised of a bunch of teams that aren't going to play beyond this weekend unless they win a tournament. And so, and listen, college administrators, I don't know who does your website stuff, but you guys could make this a lot easier. You could make it much easier when somebody just Googles the AAC baseball tournament bracket, that's what comes up. Like the first two things that come up when you do AAC baseball tournament bracket are the ACC tournament and then the 2024 American Athletic Conference basketball tournament. That's what comes up first. Shows you what baseball is thought of in that conference. But let's see if we can find it here. 2024. Yeah, maybe we can find it here. We're navigating through life together, kids. All right, so our Tulane, here we go. Tulane, they went 7-5 over Charlotte last night. Interesting. All right. So we can't find a bracket here. Let's see. Wichita State is the one that beat us, and they beat them to death. Beat them 14-4. 14-4. The Shockers, right? Nuts, man. All right, let's see if we can't find a schedule today and find out who we're rooting for in this tournament. Okay, all right, so let's see here. It's Rice. Yeah, Rice will play East Carolina today, and that game will get underway at 1 p.m. Eastern, so any moment now. Charlotte's at FAU, so those are elimination games today. So we really would like to see ECU lose that game, and the winner will go back and play Wichita State. So we're rooting for East Carolina to lose either today or tomorrow, which could be helpful for Mississippi State. But, of course, the bottom line is this, is Mississippi State needs to win. We're not going to sit here and hope everybody else kind of loses around us. But with the traffic where it is, it wouldn't hurt us. Now, what's interesting, you know, Oregon State's a team that we had talked about that we're kind of in the same situation as Mississippi State. So basically everybody in the top 10 right now, I believe, is hosting. Everybody. And of course, we've already run that down to Arkansas, Georgia, Clemson at 7, Florida State at 8, Virginia at 9. I think everybody solidified that. Indiana State is 10 RPI, and I don't think those teams should ever host, but you know my policy on that. Wake Forest is at 11, but they're 15-15. And so short of them maybe winning that tournament, I don't think there's any chance they host. I had a discussion with a couple people in college baseball media, and I spoke with somebody that used to be on a selection committee that says the committee is always hesitant to give a 500 conference team a hosting opportunity. And so I don't expect Wake. And, of course, the UC Santa Barbara stuff, we'll see. They dropped yesterday. They win the game over Riverside and drop 2 points in the RPI, and they have two more games to play. So they're a team that will likely fall out of the top 16. Oklahoma, I think there's no question they host. NC State now, their situation a little bit solidified at 14. Oklahoma State loses last night to Central Florida and gains 2 spots in the RPI. Can somebody explain to me how that works? I can't explain it to you, and I don't think whoever put this model together can explain it to you. How a team can lose to the number 32 RPI team in the country and then gain 2 spots. Doesn't make any sense. Oregon State could probably have the same beef. Oregon State now eliminated from a very weak Pac-12 tournament, and they dropped 3 spots down to 16. So they're kind of tenuous. They're kind of sweating this thing out just like we are. Vanderbilt's now at 17. Vanderbilt can't host. And then there's East Carolina at 18. Duke at 19. I don't think Duke gets in over Mississippi State as a host. South Carolina at 20. They can't host. So State now 21 in the RPI. But if you remove the teams that we know can't host, and I think there are two, probably three of those, that gets you to 18. But the bottom line is this. We're not going to arithmetic our way into hosting a regional. The RPI matters most when you're breaking down teams that deserve to host. It's a big, big honor, and it is something they don't just give away. And so you win against Tennessee today. I think you could even forfeit the game tomorrow and come home and be ready to host baseball next weekend at Dirty Noble Field. Even though we're getting a little bit of help, maybe not as much as we'd like, but we are getting a little bit of help here. But the bottom line is this. It's simple. You go win this ball game today. And it gets very, very tiresome. It really, really does. It's like, hey, well, if they take the series against Missouri, they're going to host. Well, they didn't do it, but if they had swept, then we could do it. Oh, well, they didn't sweep. Now they got to win a game in Hoover. Okay, well, we beat Ole Miss. Well, they need one more. They either need to beat Texas A&M or win the loser's bracket game. We beat A&M. Well, you know, I'm just not ready to take that leap of faith yet, right? Now they need to beat Vanderbilt. They beat Vanderbilt, it's absolutely done. Well, you lose to Vanderbilt. Oh, well, now you got to beat Tennessee. You know, and it just seems like that we have a higher hill to climb than everybody else, and some of that is because of our own doing. Some of that is because of the fact that we've lost some midweek games we had absolutely no business of losing. It's true. But all that I understood, it's so interesting that, again, Oklahoma State loses in the Big 12 tournament and then gains 2 spots in the RPI. East Carolina loses. Their AD's on the committee. And, again, I think they're going to drop even further. And again, I'm rooting hard against them because I don't think they should host. And I don't like the way they've been propped up as this G5 power and can't get to Omaha. There are a lot of other teams out there that aren't part of a Power 5 conference that have been to Omaha. But that's how I see it. So your rooting interest really right now is you're rooting against East Carolina. And of course, you can't root against Oregon State. You can root against Oklahoma State. And again, you're rooting against South Carolina. But the ultimate thing that needs to happen is Mississippi State needs to win. We're not going to pencil whip our way into it. We're going to have to win our way into it. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Just Google the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. You don't need any special websites to go to. Just Google Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Google's your friend for the most part, even though they're a corporate sellout. But But nevertheless, you Google Stark Vegas Clubhouse, their Facebook page, what it's kind of open up for you. You can go check out those pictures and peruse the fine amenities that are available to you when you choose to stay at the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. That full-service kitchen, you can go stock it, go to a local grocery store. You can cook all weekend, right? Never have to leave again. Got, you know, that wet bar there. You can stock everything up. You can just see, you know what? We're just going to vegetate all three days. We're just going to spend the whole weekend just kind of hanging out in the serene silence of the greater Starkville area, just 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus. If you're coming for a ball game weekend, you can't beat it. If you're coming for like a work trip, maybe you never thought about that. It's like, hey, I've got to bring a work crew up there. You know, we're going to be working around the Golden Triangle. And rather than go get five hotel rooms, let's get five bedrooms at the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. And then we can just, you know, have a full-service kitchen. And rather than having to constantly go out or DoorDash food, we can just eat all right here and have some common areas to work in that everybody's got their own private quarters they can retreat to and get a good night's rest. Consider that. Like the midweek stay, it's going to be less expensive, and it's also going to be more convenient for you. Also got that great back porch area, that great fire pit area out back. So it's not just about work. It's not just about ball games. You've got a great place to just kind of decompress. It's true. Be sure and check it out today to Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Now, when you get ready to book, you've got some options. You can book through Airbnb. Sure. You can book through VRBO. Absolutely. But if you want to save some money, and I don't have it like y'all do. You know, I'm always looking for a promo code. You know, the money that I make, I want to keep as much of it as I can. So go to the Evolve website. It'll come up for you. Book through Evolve and use promo code BSR10. That gets you 10% off your stay when you stay at the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Just listen to the show, man. You're saving money to stay at a premium property when you're coming to Starkville to do business or to recreate. Maybe it's a ball game weekend. Maybe it's a couple's weekend. Maybe it's a guy's weekend. Maybe it's a girl's weekend. Maybe you're doing a baby shower. I don't know. But think about the Stark Vegas Clubhouse when you are planning a big event with friends or family. All right, let's take a look at Tennessee. We haven't played them this year. And again, there are a lot of people that think perhaps that Tennessee could be the top seed in the tournament. I don't know if I'm ready to go that far yet. I think kind of what happens today will determine that. Like if State beats Tennessee and Kentucky beats South Carolina, it could be Kentucky. A&M, of course, can't do anything else to add to their resume. Everybody's just kind of scoreboard watching now, you know, right? But let's take a quick look at the Longhorns, at the Volunteers. You know, it's all the same. And now that we're all in the same conference, I guess it is. But now Tony Vitello's done a great job there. Now, Tony, it sometimes can be a polarizing figure, but you cannot argue against what Tony Vitello has done at Tennessee, a baseball program that has just kind of been, you know, an above-average team many years. They've never really been that team you look at and say, you know what, that's going to be a tough weekend. But that's changed in recent years. They opened up in that Globe Life Field Shriners College Showdown up at Arlington. Great place, right? And they go up there and they take care of Texas Tech. They lose to Oklahoma, the eventual Big 12 champions. And then they take care of Baylor. So a nice, successful weekend. They get UNC Asheville in a midweek game in East Tennessee. They get UAlbany in Knoxville. And those were some gaudy scores there. Absolute three blowouts. They get High Point, Ole Miss's best friends, in a midweek game there at Lindsey Nelson. They get Bowling Green to come in on the weekend. Bowling Green, again, a team that we expect to be in the tournament. They sweep those guys. And all three of those are Mercy Rule events. They get Kansas State, another team we're expected to get an at-large bid. They get them 15-5. Tough. And in Southern Indiana, that ends up being a 2-1 ball game. Illinois then makes their way in, and Tennessee does what they want to. That middle game was a 24-1 affair. They sweep the series without any issue whatsoever. And Eastern Kentucky comes in for a seven-inning ball game. They lose 17-2. We get an SEC play, and lo and behold, Alabama takes 2 of 3 from Tennessee. And we begin to talk about how Alabama kind of remains high in the RPI despite the fact that their season has really kind of been mediocre. A lot of it is kind of propped up by this very loud opening weekend series win against Tennessee. And a lot of people then are thinking, you know what, maybe Tennessee's going to fall off this year. That's what everybody is thinking. And then the next thing you know, here we are headed into Memorial Day weekend thinking about, you know what, Tennessee may be the number one seed in the tournament, which isn't always a great thing. The number one seed in the NCAA tournament has only won the NAFL championship one time since the format changed in 99, and that was back in 99 when Miami did it. right, so Xavier, they get by Xavier in a midweek game, and then it's an Ole Miss series. And it's interesting, too. They absolutely destroy Ole Miss on Friday and then lose to the Rebels on Saturday and then destroy Ole Miss on Sunday. Yeah, tough. And that's college baseball, right? They take down Tennessee Tech in a midweek game, and then you get the Georgia series, and they take two of three. Georgia gets that first one and just absolutely bombed. You know, Charlie Conner's guys go off, win 16-2, and then Tennessee strikes back and wins the final two games, even shutting Georgia out in game three. Auburn goes up there, Auburn hosts and wins game one, and then Tennessee bounces back to take the next two in mercy rule games. And that's one thing you notice about this Tennessee team. They're either really close or really gaudy. They destroy Alabama A&M 20-2, and then you get the big series with LSU that proved to be very, very competitive. But Tennessee sweeps the series, 6-3, 3-1, 8-4. Very competitive games, and really, I think, kind of a turning point in the LSU season. I think they began to kind of really do some soul-searching after that. They get Bellarmine 20-5, and again, a game that we can't play anymore. They go to Kentucky, and they take two out of three in Lexington. And that's going to be something that's considered. When you begin to put Tennessee and Kentucky's resume together, they won the head-to-head. Tennessee did. They lose first game 5-3 and then win 9-4 and 13-11. It's a big weekend for Tennessee. Western Carolina takes a trip in. They lose 12-4. Then Tennessee hosts Missouri. And they win 10-1. And then the second two games, we talked about how competitive Missouri was against us, and let's just be honest about this. Tennessee's been number one at some points this season. Tennessee wins both of these games 3-2. Yep, true story. Then they lose to Lipscomb. Yeah, pretty crazy. You had that big series down in Gainesville. They win game one of a doubleheader, then lose 4-3, and then bounce back to take the series with a 16-3 win. They get by Queens 6-3. And then it's the series with Vanderbilt. That's a bit of more of a rivalry than I think people fully appreciate. And it dates back years. But they go into Nashville, and they take two of three. And, of course, kind of a bounce back there. And Vanderbilt fans and players alike have kind of referenced them bouncing back to win that Sunday game after losing the first two. Vanderbilt wins the Sunday game to salvage a game. And if they don't, it really makes this week even more important. And listen, Tim Corbin has always prioritized the SEC tournament, and many coaches in this league have not. But if, guys, if they're 12-18 coming in, I don't think the same discussions are being had today. I think you may be thinking Vanderbilt needs to win the tournament and not just saying, hey, Vanderbilt's in a good spot. All right, they'd knock off Belmont 10-0, and then South Carolina. You know, South Carolina was a team a lot of people tried to push on us. I felt they were a mediocre team, middle of the pack. Beginning of the year, people were trying to say, oh, these guys are going to be great. I didn't think they'd have the pitching. It turns out they don't. They've actually relied on Chris Veach a lot, and he actually took the loss against LSU last night. But he is their guy, the pin. And then Tennessee sweeps the series, 9-3, 8-3, and 4-1. Vanderbilt at the Hoover Met. Vanderbilt destroyed Tennessee 13-4. I don't think people were expecting that. And then they bounce back, Tennessee does yesterday, and win 7-4 over A&M to eliminate the Aggies. And I think in many respects, too, I think it kind of solidifies, if it gets down to a discussion between A&M and Tennessee, for number one, I think you can say, you know what, a lot of the metrics are even, but Tennessee did beat them late in the year when it mattered. Now, we look at the stats here, and we're going to see a big arm tonight, but let's look at the hitting stuff first, and we won't break it down by conference because at this point it really doesn't matter, right? But Christian Moore, an absolute monster of a year for him. A lot of people in Tennessee are saying that because he had such a great year in the SEC that he should be considered an SEC Triple Crown winner. It doesn't work that way. That doesn't take anything away from the fact that this young man has had an absolute Golden Spikes caliber year. He just happened to do it in the year that you got Caglione and Charlie Condon in the same conference. And what a year it's been, right? But Christian Moore is a guy you got to get out. And that's easier said than done. He's hitting .386. He's got 27 tanks and 61 ribbies. Hadn't run the bases as much as I expected this year. 3-for-6 there. Blake Burke hitting .362, 16 tanks for him, 50 ribbies. Kavaris Tears, 17 home runs, 47 Billy Amick, a guy that really was kind of the straw that stirred the drink earlier. He had some injuries, not really related to baseball, that he had to deal with. Took him a while to get back, but still a heck of a year. 18 home runs, 50 ribbies, hitting .333. So you kind of run through here. Guys, there are not going to be a lot of gimmies in this order. Right? That's just kind of how it is. And those guys have some swag. They expect to win. The culture there is much better than it was years ago. Again, they haven't run the bases quite as extensively as I expected. They're 41 of 53. They've also allowed 39 stolen bases in 53 attempts. So maybe that says a little something about the catching situation or maybe holding runners. You got to be strong in a running game. And that's not just about catchers, even though the catcher's the guy that they track the statistics on. But as a team, they're hitting .314. Clearly one of the better teams in the country offensively. They're only allowing .239. Yeah. Teams are hitting .239 against them. But you start running the numbers here, guys. You start talking about these home runs. It's nuts, man. And it's up and down the order. 144 home runs. 144. Yeah. Yeah. Well, when you've got five guys with double digits and one guy coming up on 30, that's kind of how it works. It's going to be interesting to see how Justin Parker attacks these guys. Because, again, there's not a lot of holes in his lineup. And you start counting the numbers here, man, they got home runs up and down the order. I mean, like Hunter Ensley, the guy's hitting .260 with 8 tanks and 36 ribbies. He's only started 45 games, played in 53. But you run the numbers here, and you begin to see, again, what Tony and those guys are doing offensively is working, and it's proven to be sustainable no matter who kind of comes and goes in Knoxville. All right, pitching numbers. We'll do the staff stuff first. We expect to see Drew Beam tonight. But the staff numbers, .385 is an ERA as a team. And, again, you work through these numbers here. It's like maybe it wasn't what it has been, but it's still really good, right? I mean, it's like, A.J. Causey's given up 12 tanks this year. Beam's given up 11. But the ballpark, ball hadn't carried as well at night as it has during the day, and that's typically how baseball works. But again, some electric arms here, but maybe not what it has been. And despite all of that, they're still expected to be a team that's going to be a top eight national seed and contend for a national championship. Let's get into the Beam stuff here. All right, Drew Beam, 3.59 ERA, 14 starts on the year. He's 8-2, 80 innings pitch, which is a staff high. 85 hits, so he's given up a little over a hit per. That's a little bit surprising considering his success. But a lot of it's because of the fact when he does get in a little bit of trouble, he has the ability to pitch himself out of it. He's allowed 42 runs, which is also the most on the staff. 32 of them have been earned, but 71 punch-outs against 19 walks. So it's a pretty good ratio there. Not quite 4-1, but well above 3-1. He has, because of the fact he's willing to challenge hitters, he has given up some extra base hits. And in a park like this, that could be significant. 13 doubles, which is the most on the staff, and 11 home runs, which is second most on the staff. And then opponents are hitting .272 against him. And again, he's able to sometimes kind of get that strikeout too. But when you begin to kind of break this thing down and you look at batting average against, it's the third highest on the staff for Tennessee, and the two guys that have given up a worse base hitting average against are guys that don't pitch as much. Austin Hundley has had 8 appearances, and people are hitting .324. He's only pitched 8 innings. Derek Schaefer, also 8.2 innings. Opponents are hitting .294 against. So among the regulars, Drew Beam is the guy that has been hit around the most. Now, we have not hit the baseball well in Hoover. At times we have, but the big issue is we have not been able to string hits together. We hadn't been able to get those 2 and 3 hits and put together that big inning. And so while Drew Beam is very, very talented, I think this is going to be a competitive ballgame. We got to keep them in the yard. Yeah, Tennessee's a better team than us. And if you don't agree with that, you're just kind of being a homer. But Tennessee is a better team than us. I don't know that they're much better, because, we've lost some games that we shouldn't have lost due to our own issues. That's the difference. Tennessee has won the games they were expected to win. And, again, that's that loud series win at Kentucky really jumps out there. But looking here, just kind of his recent starts here, I don't know. Maybe we'll go back. We'll go back a little farther here. Let's go back to Georgia. You know, again, that's a series that Tennessee ultimately won, but Bean goes 2 2/3 of an inning, allows 8 hits and 7 runs. And not a great day at the ballpark. Bounces back against Auburn, goes 7 innings, allows 2 runs on 3 hits. LSU, 6.2 innings, gives up 8 hits, but again, they scatter them and only gives up the 1 run. And of course, that LSU offense, in many respects, is kind of built on home runs. They want to be able to hit the long ball. Kentucky, he goes 4 1/3, allows 7 hits, 4 runs. Against Missouri, 7 1/3, 6 hits, 2 runs. Florida, 6 innings, 6 hits, 3 runs. Vandy, 5 1/3, 6 hits, 5 runs. South Carolina, 6, 5 3. And so I share that because, you know, sometimes the mystique kind of exceeds the reality. Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell you Drew Beam is not a dude. He absolutely is. But I don't think that he has turned in the numbers that maybe perhaps people were expecting this year. I think they thought he was going to be a lot bigger and better than he has been, and that's not in any way to take anything away from him, but he's not superhuman. And so we're going to have to find a way to go out here and put some things in play. If we go out there pouting, it's going to be a long day. If we come out there fired up and ready to go, we got a chance to win this ball game. And, of course, you win this ball game, I don't care what anybody else says, you win this thing, I think you've solidified exactly where you need to be. And I get tired of talking about it. And here's the thing, we all want the same thing. Well, I mean, 99% of us. But, you know, my point being is that when you begin to work through this thing, it's like, hey, it's all within your hands. We can talk about RPI. We can talk about, you know, strength of schedule. We can talk about non-conference wins. We can talk about, you know, quad fours, quad ones, whatever. But you can remove a lot of that by just winning this ball game. Against the Tennessee team, it's very, very good. There's a reason they're high in the RPI. But if you go out and you have beaten Texas A&M and you have beaten Tennessee in 2 of your last 3 ball games, 2 teams that are expected to be top 8 national seeds, when you're fighting for your postseason, the committee is going to respond to that. They are. All right, looking defensively here at Tennessee, as a team, 978. Good, not great. 978. And, you know, looking, we can calculate here by the number of errors. Dean Curley with 11 errors to lead the team. But, you know, it's kind of up and down. You know, Christian Moore's made 7 this year. And Dean Curley, of course, a freshman. You know, so you expect some of that. But you start working through this. Again, this is not Tennessee of 2022. And even that team got beat in the postseason. So we got to come out there and keep them in the yard. And I think because of the fact that, you know, Tennessee – really didn't have a lot to prove in this tournament. They're just kind of getting their pitching set up. I don't think it was a deal where they maybe came to this tournament and say, hey, we got to go win this thing. I think they got embarrassed by Vanderbilt, and you start thinking, you know what, we don't need to lose seeding in the top 8. We want the best seed we can get. They bounce back, and the A&M win, I think, was big for them to kind of rile this thing up here. But, again, you look at this whole deal with Mississippi State, you just win. It's that simple. You just win. And then you would own 2 wins over top 5 RPI teams here to kind of close it out. And that's the last impression. I did have somebody tell me, too, when you begin to think about, you know, the metrics they look at kind of beyond the RPI and the quad system, they talk a lot about your last 10. How did you close out the season? And so you look at Mississippi State, you know, and say, hey, this is how we closed it out. You know, we won our final home series. We did play that North Alabama game you guys told us we had to play, and we won it. We came to Hoover. We beat our arch rival, who was playing for their season. And then we knocked off Texas A&M, the team that you guys told us was best in the country. We lose to a streaking Vanderbilt team that we've already taken 2 out of 3 from. And then now you take down Tennessee. It's a compelling case. I could work against Mississippi State for Mississippi State if I'm in that room. But the bottom line is this. It's all within our reach, and if we don't make it, it's nobody's fault but our own. It's not going to be because the committee snubbed. It's just going to be because we lose to games like Central Arkansas and Austin Peay, and of course Austin Peay saw their season end yesterday. You know, And so, again, the midweeks matter. No matter what anybody else tells you on social media, the midweeks matter, because here we are. It's so funny. Midweeks don't matter, but it's like, hey, why is Mississippi State going to get in? Well, they lost a couple of midweeks they shouldn't have. You know what I'm saying? So we can't talk out of both sides of our mouth. But the bottom line, just to simplify it for you guys as best I can, you beat Tennessee, you're going to host. You don't beat Tennessee, you're leaving it in the hands of the committee, and you got to hope that you get a favorable ruling. All right, if you guys hadn't done so, go to whenthebottomfalls.com, and you can get the newest book, When the Bottom Falls. A lot of people around Hoover have been asking me about that. Many have already read it, and I appreciate that. All my sports titles are there as well. That's Flim Flam, Stark Villains, Alpha Dogs, and, of course, Dogpile. And every Bulldog fan needs Dogpile. And they're getting everything set up for you all to be able to pre-order The Dude. I've only got 3 chapters left. We'll finish that up here in the next week to 10 days. And let me tell you, too, big day at True Rest of Starkville today. I think they're going to float about 20 people today. You need some rest and relaxation in your life. I don't know what your ailments are. Maybe it's stress. Maybe it's anxiety. Maybe you got chronic pain. Maybe you got old sports injuries or war injuries, or maybe just living life injuries. Maybe we can help you. Maybe we can. And if nothing else, you can get an hour break from all of that and just let your mind and body rest as you float on top of the water in one of our flotation pods. Go by for a free tour. Dan is happy to answer your questions. Call 662-268-7601, and you can speak directly to my wife, and she'll explain everything you need to know, answer all your questions. You can book at that point. You can get more information. You can go to truerest.com, or you can follow us on social media at True Rest of Starkville on Facebook and Instagram. I've had so many people around here say, hey, the float. We have a lot of student athletes that come float too. But here's the thing. You don't have to be an athlete to benefit from this. Nothing has done more for my anxiety in my life than being able to float regularly. It truly has. So y'all be sure and come check it out. We got people that come from all over, too. We got some regular people that come up from Jackson and over from Birmingham. And we appreciate the support. But the more thing, it's about you. It's about your own health and your own wellness. So come be a part of everything at True Rest of Starkville. And join us over at jeanspage.com. We're here all week, man. We cover the Bulldogs even when the Bulldogs leave town. We do. We think you deserve that. We know the Bulldogs do. And so I hope you're enjoying our coverage from Hoover. And we'll be here as long as Mississippi State is here. And so if we lose tonight, I'll head home tomorrow. If we stay through Sunday, I'll head home Sunday. I will be here as long as your Bulldogs are here, providing you with in-depth coverage. And I will tell you this, if we win, I'll even give you a bonus show. Like, if we win today and we find a way to keep playing, I'll give you a bonus show this weekend before we get out of town, just to kind of, again, clarify where we are. It may not be a full hour and 30 minutes, but we'll give you a show, kind of update as we get into, Selection Monday. Okay? Hey, you guys have a great weekend, and hopefully that means we get to talk here soon, and hopefully the Bulldogs can come through and bring up a big win for us tonight against the University of Tennessee. But until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies, and people can see a difference in the way we live.
Save big money on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Menards has a huge selection of concrete and mortar mixes. Our concrete products are great for a variety of applications, including pouring a walkway, setting a post, or even installing stone veneer. View our entire selection of concrete mixes and supplies in-store and on Menards.com. Plus, check out the weekly flyer for more great deals happening this week. Save big.